everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. Tuesday, January 2nd, 2024. Hope everybody had a lovely holiday. This is one of those professional milestone days in nearly six decades for me involved in media. It was 13 years ago today that we launched the radio program after 22 years on Arizona Illustrated, on Arizona Public Media. And our Buckmaster Show pledge, the 5 points worth repeating, I think. Listener opinions matter. Respect the audience. It's a forum for ideas, quality guests, and informed listeners. So the pledge is there and very active as we begin our 14th year with the radio program and 36th year in Tucson Media. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on the BuckmasterShow.com website, which is also the place for pretty much every show we have done. They're all archived, going back all the way to that January 2nd, 2011. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of the tenets of our show pledge is to present quality guests. And in keeping with that, he is a very qualified guest, Dr. Dennis Hoffman, director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at ASU. He is also director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. His sponsored projects include the construction and maintenance of the revenue forecasting model used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona. That he's been doing that each year since 1982. Professor, how are you, sir?
Bill, I'm doing very well. a little frog in the throat this morning, so we'll get by there. But congratulations on your anniversary, and let's hope I can live up to my billing, your very kind billing as a quality guest.
Well, you're the first guest of the new year, and how's it looking? How is 2024 looking to you as we're about 1 week away now from the start of the 2024 Arizona legislative session?
Well, Bill, the economy remains quite strong. Many economists are still looking for that long-predicted recession. And the reason they're predicting it, by the way, is there are a number of indicators that predict recession. We've never had a Federal Reserve tightening cycle that has been this severe without triggering one. And so it'll be kind of like pulling a rabbit out of a hat if we can avoid one. But frankly, it's not here yet. There's no signs of it. The labor market has been very, very resilient. And so things are good in that regard. As to the legislative session, I just think as a as a general comment, the economy will continue to produce revenue, or at least a revenue tax base. The challenge that we face, I think, in the state stems from the fact that over the last 3 to 5 years, we've taken a lot of money from the federal government. We always do that, but we've taken an inordinate amount of money from the federal government to sustain state government, and all the while we've made major reductions in tax rates. So the question going forward is, how will that look when we have to depend upon our own economy to generate that revenue base with these lower tax rates? Because they're far lower than they were prior to the pandemic.
And it's the tax cuts, the call for tax cuts at the legislature has been a hallmark of Republican leadership in the governor's office. And we have, of course, a Democratic governor. And I wonder if Katie Hoffman's going to be talking about tax cuts. I kind of doubt it, but certainly members of the legislature, Republicans, will be, Professor Hoffman.
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard much in the word of additional tax cuts, but you never know. certainly nobody's talking about tax increases. And, you know, it's very difficult to get a tax increase in this state. We have, you know, protected and overprotected against, you know, any legislature actually raising taxes on Arizonans. And, you know, frankly, if you look at us historically, there was no need to raise taxes. My concern has been just the unbridled, aggressive tax rate reductions that we've seen, especially with respect to the income tax, in the last few years. I do worry about whether or not we got enough money to pay the bills, Bill.
Do you think we do?
Well, you know, you can only pay those bills that you have, you know, that you have revenue to accommodate them. And so we're just going to have to tighten up the belt again and, you know, kind of weather the storm. And so we're going to have to see how this all pans out. Now, fortunately, if we avoid the recession, we should not have to revisit the draconian years of you know, 2009, 10, and 11 after the Great Recession, when revenues just dried up completely. And, of course, public sector needs don't go away. In fact, they get worse during recessions.
Sounds like there won't be a lot of spare change for growth in programs.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
How about the growth of the job growth? It has slowed, hasn't it, significantly across Arizona and the nation this year or last year?
Well, you know, this is a great question, Bill. I saw some data in the last few weeks that suggests that the revisions that are an annual part of tracking jobs, revisions for the prior year will take place in March, and we've gotten some early word on those revisions that job growth has not indeed slowed as much as the initial data suggested. So you're right in terms of the initial data that's been produced for Arizona, but we have to stay tuned until these revisions come in. Again, most of the state is hitting on all cylinders. That, you know, anything involved in real estate, you know, title companies, inspections, real estate agents, businesses that supply new housing, you know, have been challenged, certainly. But, you know, the rest of the picture is really very good. The service sector is strong. Healthcare is booming. And, you know, things really, again, look pretty good, all things considered.
And water sustainability in our chats throughout the year in 2024, Professor Hoffman will be keeping an eye on that and how that will impact, especially there in the valley, how growth in real estate will be impacted by assured water supply.
Right. Well, the water issue is a big one, as you well know, Bill, in the state, and it's an urban area issue. It's an agricultural issue. It's a conservation issue, and then you know, certainly one that's very much influenced by climate change. I love looking at weather projection models, and I counted four winter storms on the horizon as of this morning's simulation. Now, of course, all those can change, but at least they're on the horizon now, whereas over the last couple of months, I haven't seen any moisture coming in. So that would be a good news if we could get those storms.
It's a perfect lead-in to my guest at 12:30, University of Arizona climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. We'll ask him about the impact of El Nino on Arizona's winter weather. All right, Dr. Yeah. Dennis Hoffman, always a pleasure. I hope you and yours have a lovely 2024. Thank you very much.
And you as well, Bill. Good talking with you as always.
Always. Thank you very much. Professor Dennis Hoffman, up at ASU at the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business up in Tempe. Shelley Fishman is coming up in a moment, and he's kind of wobbly with that thumb. It's not all that great, the first trading day in New York on the markets. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Mona's. They had a great season, a great holiday season. They're now looking forward to 2024, as all of us are. They're located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery, open at 6:30. They are taking, I think Steve told me when I was up there New Year's Eve, they're taking today off, and they'll be back at it tomorrow. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. We'll be right back with Shelley Fishman. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through BuckmasterShow.com or at ShelleyFishman.com.
And Happy New Year to Shelley Fishman and happy anniversary, Shell. We've been together here on the Buckmaster Show. Let's see, we're starting into our 14th year, and pretty much you've been with me every Tuesday for pretty much 13 full years.
About all of that.
All of that.
Well, Happy New Year
to
you,
Happy New Year and Happy Anniversary
Can't
Show.
I can't believe we've been doing this for 13, 14 years.
I don't know.
Wow.
I have no idea where the time goes. Who knows where the time goes? All right. I thought Professor Hoffman was pretty much right on. I guess people can always try to make a case for a recession.
Well,
right?
You know, let me just quote Mr. or Dr. Hoffman. Let me be the first to pull a rabbit out of the hat this year for you.
Mm-hmm.
There is not going to be a recession this year.
There you go.
The Fed has, in fact, already engineered a soft landing. It's hard to know exactly when to call it, you know, call the war won. But what the Fed has done, either through brilliance or accident, not sure which, is taken what might have been a serious situation and alleviated it tremendously. We have, and let's, you know, we've certainly gone into some of the numbers for last year, and they're almost uniformly good. But when you take a look at the Fed's primary target during the year, which has been to bring down inflation, it has happened. Inflation is essentially down where the Fed wants it to be. And, you know, they wanted it at 2%. Maybe it's at 2.5% now. We got some numbers last week. But what has happened is that it has come down despite what the Fed has done. It has come down despite the history of how you manage macroeconomics. And that's because the inflation was not caused by the usual causes, by the usual suspects. It was caused by the pandemic and by supply chain problems. And that kind of fixed itself. And so what the American people have done, despite what they say in the polls, is continue to spend. And they've had a whole bunch of stimulus from the federal government, both individuals and also corporations. We have some really interesting national projects underway in terms of the CHIPS Act and also in infrastructure rebuilding.
And trying to get chip manufacturing, more of it here domestically than over in Taiwan and other places.
Exactly. But what people don't realize is, you know, a new administration takes office, and it takes them, you know, a couple of months to get their act together in terms of proposing legislation. Then it takes them a couple of months to get that passed. And so, in, you know, in the case of the Biden administration, that is kind of what went on. The first year, they were trying to get it together. They had expressions of what they wanted to do on the economic front. They were dealing with a pandemic. They were dealing with some, you know, fairly high inflation. But what was also happening was they were getting things passed. And now you have the process of getting that passed legislation enacted and, you know, shovels in the ground, if you will. And that's happening. So, you know, at a time when you would expect the public at large to be somewhat conservative in terms of their, you know, willingness to go out on a limb and buy stuff. You know, it's not a very short limb they're out on. They're out there buying stuff like almost they never have before. We have very, very low unemployment. We have very, very high spending. And now the Fed is talking about reducing interest rates, which is going to make it even more possible for corporations to put shovels in the ground and start the projects that they may have been waiting for lower interest rates to start. And individuals will now begin to buy bigger items like houses and cars and the stuff that they normally need to finance in one form or another.
Unfortunately, the people don't see this. According to the polls.
Certainly according to the polls. And yet, you know, I scratch my head and I'm losing my patience with this to a certain extent. What we know is that wage growth for the lowest 40% of earners mm-hmm. has been about 2 points higher than inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not counting the stimulus checks. Mm-hmm. The top 10% of earners have had about a 1% increase in earnings mm-hmm. over the past year. So we actually have higher earnings increases at the lower end than we do at the top end. Now, it by no means fixes the wage inequality problem, but that has now kind of, I think, found its way into the economy in ways that even those people who don't want to see good news can't deny. Mm-hmm. And so when you see what is going on with retail, when you see what is going on with public works projects, when you see what is going on with the number of people who are employed, let alone the low number of people who are unemployed, we have essentially passed all of the expectations we had. And so you scratch your heads if you're an economist. If you're a 1980s, 1990s economist, you scratch your head and say, this doesn't make any sense. If you're willing to take a look at the new paradigm, which is very different from what it was in the 1970s and 1980s, you say, hey, wait a second, we have to rethink this whole model that we use for determining what the public is going to perceive and how they're going to think about it. And that's what we've got going on right now. We have a public that is more influenced, I think, by politics and by the news media and how the news media has morphed or have morphed over the the past decade or decade and a half. And so we have people who, instead of rooting for good news, are just sticking the knife in and twisting it because that makes political sense for them. So what you have is behavior breaking away from articulation of how people feel. And I think that's going to be the norm for a while.
All right, Shell, would you mind if we take a quick call?
By all means.
All right, let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we'll be going to the live line right now. Who is with us?
Dial tone.
Hello. Do we have our caller? Let's see. John is... No? No, I hear a dial tone. Anyway...
Well, call back if you can.
Yeah. Hello?
Franz?
Hey, who's on the line? Yeah, hey, Franz, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just calling in real quick to congratulate you on an amazing career, on your anniversary of your show.
Thank you.
And got really intrigued and is sorry I'm not in town because I'd love to hear the rest of this conversation. You have an amazing guest there. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, that's Shelley Fishman. He's with us every Tuesday at about 12:15, Franz Joachim is with us on the live line, someone I had the pleasure of working with at Channel 6 AZPM, and Franz has now gone on to become the head guy. He is heads up public broadcasting in the state of New Mexico. So congratulations on your great career, Franz.
Well, thank you, and you were part of that, and it's always a pleasure to hear from you and love your show, and I'll try and find it online. It's got to be online somewhere.
It is. Just go to buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com and hope you'll be a regular listener. Thanks, Franz.
I will now. Thank you, Bill, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
That was nice.
One to hear.
That's great.
Wonderful to hear a voice from the past, and he's gone on to do such great things over at New Mexico Public Broadcasting. So, Shelley, Franz was enjoying what you were saying. So how about headwinds? Headwind picture.
The headwind picture for the economy is really the kind of stuff that used to be midterm and long term and has now crept into the short term. And, the biggest unknown, except we know the trend, is climate change. And we know that we have done precious little to prevent that climate change from happening or even mitigating the rapidity with which it happens. So our only choice right now is to pay for the stuff that breaks, and a lot of stuff is breaking.
Yes.
And so the cost of that plus the cost to agriculture of droughts and floods is one of the biggest headwinds that we didn't think we'd face for a while. The other big headwind in the economy is this whole business of income inequality and how it's playing out politically and how people – remember, recessions are, sometimes caused by the Fed, but recessions are caused by people's behavior. And when people begin to behave like they're not going to – that they don't have faith in the economic future, and they begin to cut back, that makes a recession kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that, to me, are the two biggest short-term now dangers for 2024 for the economy. As far as investors are concerned, the investment community has looked into the future and saw a bright light and has just done stunningly in 2023. If they begin to sour on the medium-term future for the economy, then we'll see a much slower growth in stocks and bonds over the next year.
All right, Shelley, Happy New Year to you and yours. Hope it's a great year for us.
You too, Bill.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break right here. Zach Guido, Dr. Guido, are you a climate scientist, is coming up next. And what is the deal with these storms lined up all the way to Asia almost? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a milestone edition, at least in my career, as it was 13 years ago today that we started our radio show. So that means we are launching into year number 14, thanks to all of our great sponsors, all of our listeners. And it's really been a pleasure and a delight to bring this radio show to our friends here in Southern Arizona. And really, with the internet, people can listen to the program anywhere in the world. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Green Things, Zocalo Village, great sponsors. Thank you to them, Jan and Jack, the owners, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Everything you need for the garden, and Zocalo Village has some beautiful things for your home and for your patio, like some beautiful Talavera pottery. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things, in their 53rd year of business, they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. Zach Guido. Dr. Guido is one of two dozen regular contributors to the Buckmaster Show. I'm just so honored to have people like Dr. Guido who appear on the program on a regular basis. Dr. Guido is our contributor on climate. Zach is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience. Acronym is AIR, appropriately enough. AIR coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Happy New Year to you, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bill, and congrats for completing 13 years. I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is the 13th year, so we launch into the 14th year. So let's see, 13 with the radio show, 22 over on the TV show on Arizona Illustrated. So we're be launching into the 36th year, Zach, in the Tucson media. So there you go.
Fantastic, yeah. Fantastic. So, hopefully 2024 will
be a better year. Hope it'll be a much better year for me, at least personally, of course. So I got out some of the covering for the plants. I'm looking at this forecast, and we've got three or four storms at least lined up, and we may have some of the coldest temperatures, certainly of the winter and fall coming up.
Yeah, and it comes at a good time. You know, we've had a pretty mild, you know, across actually the U.S., a pretty mild winter so far. And really the snowpack conditions across the West are quite dismal. I'm looking at a map right now of like all of the higher elevation sites from Colorado west to California, up north to Washington. And the vast majority of them are showing snowpack conditions at less than 50% of their long-term median. So, we will welcome snow and cold conditions for sure. So hopefully we'll get some of that. I know California, for example, will bear the brunt of this upcoming storm. I believe it's forecasted for the end of this week, beginning of next week. So that'll be an important part of, you know, the snowpack across the Sierras. So we'll see if we get anything out of it. I think there's some rain on the forecast for about a week out for us, but it's still sort of at the far end of what the models can tell us, but all of the models are picking up something there. So we'll just have to wait a little bit longer and see. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't know about you, Bill.
Well, the models also indicate we'll be on kind of the southern, extreme southern end of these storms. So the predictability becomes very variable, Dr. Guido.
Yeah, that's right. And, weather forecasts, it's been remarkable over the last, 5 or 6 decades, the amount of progress that has happened and our ability to predict out. But really, they lose skill. That's a technical term in meteorology. It's basically accuracy. They lose their ability to sort of provide some information of value, outside of about 7 days, 10 days at most. And it depends on where you are and the time of year and the variable in question. So, 7 days out is still sort of at the far ends of predictability, but it's there, and we're seeing something. And when all of the models are picking up on something similar, you have more confidence. And looking at many of the model runs, they are showing some signs of precipitation for us here in the Southwest. So again, we'll have to wait a little bit.
Let's take a look at the year 2023 as far as precipitation. When all was said and done, it looked like a pretty average year. Is that correct, Dr. Guido?
Well, it did, except you really have to parse this in the two wet periods, right? Like we have our winter conditions and we have our monsoon conditions. And you know, the monsoon was, as we all know, which you and I have talked about quite a bit, was historically dry. Not at the airport itself, right? But the airport in Tucson saw one of the few areas that was just a little bit below average. But across the Southwest and even across the Metro Tucson area, it was a very dry year. It didn't rival 2020, but was, I'm not looking at the numbers, but was a pretty dry, historically dry, let's say top 10 dry monsoon. And that was, if you incorporate last year's winter, which was decent, then you sort of get a sort of average, near average picture. But that sort of covers up a little bit of what we experienced during the monsoon season. So yeah, maybe the rainfall wasn't so bad, but it was one of the warmer years on record. So I'm looking at 2023 for Tucson, and it was tied for the third warmest on record.
Yeah,
and that's according to the National Weather Service here. The first one was 2017. The second warmest was 2020, and we were just a little bit behind at 2023. So pretty significant in that respect.
And the hottest year on record globally was 2023. So it's not surprising that the 2023 was the third hottest on record.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the really the temperature was the story of 2023. And frankly, I'm expecting it to be the story of 2024. If I had to make one prediction, I think it's going to be another near record year globally when we talk about global temperatures. And that's because of we have a strong El Nino in the works. It's going to persist through the early winter likely. And normally what happens is you end up seeing a global temperature spike about 6 months-ish after that event wanes. So, and that's just because the El Niños bring warmer than average sea surface conditions in the tropical Pacific Ocean, and that heat goes somewhere, and some of it gets diffused into the atmosphere and has a general warming signature, that can persist for 6 months after the event. So we'll likely see very warm global average temperatures again in 2024.
Well, if we look down under and the summer, which is just really cranking up in Australia and New Zealand, I was checking New Zealand specifically breaking all sorts of records in the past couple of days, warm temperatures that are some of them unheard of in what is referred to as the Southern Alps. That's the mountainous range of the South Island of New Zealand and Sydney, and are looking at really, really hot temperatures. So as far as summer beginning in 2024, it's already started down under.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I don't tend to look in Southern Hemisphere, but you're right. I'm sure they're experiencing some heat waves. I mean, and heat waves and elevated temperatures are quite common. It's the persistence, it's the frequency of those that stack on each other that really, for the climate part of this and thinking about like what the full year looks like, those are the things that matter. So I haven't been paying attention to, the evolution of summer down south, but to the extent that there's persistent heat waves and really high conditions, that could be harbingers of what we see in our summer, but we'll have to wait and see.
All right, Zach.
The one thing that is certain, will say though, Bill, is just the trends in temperature that we've experienced. Almost, there's been a persistent warming. We all know this. That's the climate change signal. So the expectation is again, like if we look at conditions, in 2024 compared to let's say 1970 or 1980. It's almost assuredly going to be warmer than those conditions, and that's the telltale sign of global climate change. It's most notable in temperature. It's much less notable in precipitation, and we've talked about this before. And that doesn't mean that climate change doesn't affect precipitation. It just means it's a little bit harder to detect the signal from the noise, and in part that's related to there's just much more variability in precipitation. So it can be a little bit of a difficult thing to understand statistically.
All right, Dr. Zach Guido with us on the live line. After we take our break, Zach, I'm going to ask you about El Nino and when was the last time we had an El Nino event, and was that time quite a rainmaker? So you can do some quick research if you don't have that right at your fingertips. So we'll take a break. More with Dr. Guido right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are celebrating the launch of year number 14 for our radio program, wanting to thank all of our regular listeners and, of course, the fine sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. These are the people who believe in my mission with my radio show, people like my friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send a lot of listeners over to that area, people who've lived in Tucson all their lives. They've never tried to visit over there or for whatever reason. It's only about a three-hour drive, but they all come back and say they had a great time. SouthwestNewMexico.org. is the website to find out about all the great activities, a lot of outdoor activities. Dr. Zach Guido, our contributor on climate, he's one of two dozen regular Buckmaster Show contributors. We're just so honored to have as a regular part of what we do here with the program. We've been talking about a strong El Nino predicted this winter. Zach, do you have any idea when the last El Nino was that affected southern Arizona?
Yeah, I do. In fact, you have to go back to 2018, 2019 for our last El Nino. And just to remind listeners, we basically had the last three winters were La Nina. We had back-to-back-to-back, triple-dip La Nina. The El Nino, the last El Nino, like I said, was in 2018, started in the fall and persisted through the late spring of 2019. But that was a weak event. And this one right now is a strong event. It might end up being, a top five in ultimate strength. And you have to go back to the last time we had a strong event was started in 2015 and persisted through the spring of 2016. That event rivaled some of the two major super El Ninos on record, 82, 83, and 1997, 98. And this event that is forming right now is not quite as strong as that one. But those are our two most recent events. The analog is probably a closer analog is probably the strong event in 2015, 2016 than the 2018, 2019 event. But I will say this to the question that you asked right before the break. It's what we care about is not like the sea surface temperature in the tropical Pacific Ocean, but what we care about is the weather here in the Southwest. And I will say for the strong event in 2015, 2016, we were expecting the sort of average signal. What we expect during an El Nino event is for the Southwest to receive above average rainfall conditions. It doesn't always happen. It sort of just tilts the chances. But you know, at the beginning of the winter with a strong El Nino on the horizon, that's what you would expect. That's what you would bet on. And in fact, it was a below average rainfall year in 2015, 2016. So there's some nuances there. Like it depends on there's different flavors of El Nino, like where the really strong warm waters are located within the tropical Pacific Ocean. Some are more east-based than others. So those kinds of nuances can impact conditions here in the Southwest. But again, I think, you know, if I was betting on this, given that it is an El Nino event, I would expect there to be above average rainfall conditions here in the Southwest.
What does that mean for colder temperatures? Usually these storms have a lot of cold air behind them, but generally on the upside, the temperatures have been very warm and hot, as we've talked about. You know, third hottest year, warmest year on record in Tucson. What does that do to winter low temperatures, Dr. Zach Guido?
Well, there's less of a signal in our area between El Nino, La Nina, and temperatures. But when you do get storms that come in, sometimes they can be ferried in from the Northwest and entrain some cold air. And you generally get, you know, a correlation when there are storms that there are lower than average temperatures. But the thing about El Nino is that you can also have storms that entrain moist tropical air and really bring copious precipitation, but also warmer temperatures. And that's when you get sort of higher elevation rainfall that if there is snow present there, it can really cause rapid melt of the snowpack there. So during El Nino conditions, you can kind of have either warm storms or cold storms, and generally it sort of averages out, and there isn't a strong temperature signal with El Nino here in the Southwest.
So you could easily have, and I'm looking at the forecast, and we talked in the first segment with you, Zach, about how we've got several storms lined up, but it can go one maybe a warmer storm, and the next one would have a much more cold air behind it.
Yeah, and a lot of that will depend on sort of the background conditions, the weather conditions, how far south that trough moves. Does it move south to our west? So is it able to entrain some tropical moisture and warmer temperatures? So a lot of it depends on the movement of the westerlies and that sort of thing. So that's why it's hard to say. I mean, this storm does look like it's going to bring some cooler conditions with it, but it's not to say that every storm during an El Nino event will be cold, for example.
Well, would you say that trying to predict an El Nino winter is about as difficult as trying to predict a summer monsoon in Tucson, Arizona?
I would actually say no. I think there isn't a more difficult phenomenon that we care about here in the Southwest, a more difficult phenomenon to predict than the monsoon. The prediction of El Nino and La Nina is much more, there's more predictability there, in part because it's based on the conditions of sea surface temperatures, which have memory in them. And that's why we can use, that's why they evolved slower. So the changes in sea surface temperatures evolve slower, and consequently there's some memory there, and we know the physical relations between how those changes in the tropical Pacific affect sort of the position of the jet stream in more northern latitudes. So there's more predictability with at longer lead times with El Nino, La Nina. It's not perfect, and in fact, it's not even that high. It just tips the odds slightly, but there's some value there. Now the monsoon, it's a much more variable phenomenon. There's a lot of features that would influence whether or not you get rain on one day, or you get breaks, whether or not you get surges. So it's a much more difficult thing to predict. So we feel pretty confident about. Doesn't always work out. There is some value there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zach Guido. I always appreciate you, and we'll talk in about a month. We'll see where we are this winter. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, and thanks to everybody for supporting us over all these years. We're into year 14. Back with you tomorrow.